Donald Glover's Atlanta, episode 9, Juneteenth, right after this.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Welcome to Atlanta, where the players play, and the players today happen to be myself at I Am Tehran. You might not have recognized me because I'm suited and booted rather than the bathrobe heartthrob today, but find me on social media all across the board at I Am Tehran, and I'm alongside my homeboy,
Chaos J.
I don't know if you should say three K's before your name.
Like, or maybe there was a reason behind that. Maybe there was a reason behind that. Yeah, but I'm Chaos J, K-A-A-O-S-J.
Subliminals? You were throwing subliminals right there?
Pop, pop, subliminal shots.
Why is there always a gang thing with you?
I don't know, man. It comes out.
Why can't it be
when you have this song playing in the background?
Why can't you do this? Like this and be like, writing essays because I'm educated. Like, that's the thing.
Reading books.
Thank you, Stephen. Here's the thing. We're talking Atlanta, of course, Donald Glover. And when I say Donald Glover, I do mean Spider-Man Donald Glover. And now Lando from Star Wars Donald Glover, who's come out with this amazing show, Atlanta. We've been covering every single week. This is episode 9, the week before the finale. This week's episode is called Juneteenth, which is very appropriately named because they are attending, and when I say they, I mean Earn and Van attend a Juneteenth party. Do you know a lot about Juneteenth?
I know a little bit about a little bit.
Sure. Okay, so Juneteenth, the concept of the Juneteenth, and this is why it was named, Juneteenth is the celebration of the emancipation of slavery in Texas, which actually came out, the news reached Texas by way of General, I want to call him Glander, I think that's his name, Grover Glandon, about a month after. It was like two weeks to a month later than everywhere else got the news in Texas. So they celebrate that day across the South, especially Juneteenth. And it's June 19th. That's
Gordon
the day
Granger.
Of celebration. Gordon Granger. Thank you in the booth. So General Gordon Granger, how do I even know that? I have no idea. Brought the news and then boom. So the celebration begins June 19th annually every year. So Earn and Van reluctantly attend this, and when I say reluctant, especially Earn, very much reluctant to attend this event.
Right, and it's one of those where you need to be able to show face, and for Van, you know, having come from, you know, the previous episode, where she lost her job.
That was 2 weeks ago.
Okay, so 2 weeks ago, she lost her job, so she really does need this opportunity. And by going here, you know, and putting on the game face, that was the idea, was that she'll be able to network and, you know, the sky's the limit, according to,
exactly.
You know, according
it's
to the host.
Networking. It's the elite of Black society all in one event. And as we noticed this right away, because we roll up to this magnificent looking house, which the concept was, it's almost like the slave has become the master, taking that place, right? And we saw a lot of episodic situations of white privilege, white guilt, all play out into this. And the host of the party, Monique, Miss Monique and her husband, who's a optometrist who is white, as we come to find out, and is very obsessed with Black culture. And it's a hobby that
obsessed
he's turned
is
into
an
a,
understatement.
A lifestyle. And it's a formative figuring of white guilt. It's something we see play out often. I've seen this kind of white person, someone who's so about African-Americanness, even though they're white, that they start teaching you and preaching to you about African-Americanness. And
as
I saw
if
that.
You don't know.
But
as
we,
if
sometimes
I don't wake
we don't.
Up like this every day.
But sometimes we actually don't know the details.
This is true.
But we experience it. And so the experience is a lot different than the education. Being black and knowing Black are two different things. And you can be Black and not know black history, but a lot of us don't know a lot of the dates and a lot of the historic events and things that led up to it. But we understand the concept and conceptualize of being Black because we experience it on a daily basis. And that's something that was brought to light with the doctor who came out, and even the interpretation of Malcolm X's powerful quote said, no, my painting, it was a painting on the wall, it was a man stabbing an eagle. It was like, my painting's the only interpretation of it because I did it. As if,
right.
And that's a form of white privilege to basically tell a Black person how to feel or how it is to be Black.
Right. Pretty much.
And we see that a lot. I see that a lot, especially when I've felt that sometimes when a white person is more offended by the word nigga than I am. I feel like that's a thing. Like, don't tell me how to be offended. I know how to be offended. And we're also seeing this with Colin Kaepernick right now and a subtextual group of white people who pretty much try to tell black people how they should and should not protest. We saw that with Black Lives Matter.
Oh, of course. And then, no, please go ahead.
No, I was just saying, when it comes to like the concept of, it is a form of white privilege in that is, I am so privileged, I can just simply choose to learn about being black. And it's a difference between being educated and understanding. And then you're teaching, now you're preaching, now you're explaining. And it was funny because towards the end of the episode, we see Monique actually confessing to Van that her husband's actually told even her mom that she's cooking the collard greens wrong. You know, and that's like it's interesting to watch that because it plays out. I've seen this many times. It's a white man whose guilt has taken on a new form, a new life. And through this guilt, he doesn't realize just even having that is a form of white privilege. Just being able to say something as simple to Ernest, why don't you go to Africa? Not realizing it's not like these are free trips to Africa.
Right. Like, it's just like, oh, hey, I'm coming to claim my yearly trip to the motherland.
Yeah.
It, you know, and then not only is it preaching, but I feel like there's a sense of condescension in there. You know, when you're telling your, you know, yes, there, like you said earlier, there can be some educating benefits to it, but it's all about how it's done and how it's executed. And yeah, I don't know. It was just so much to take in, and then to watch him just, he was just so into it though. And it was, to me, I found that very humorous. It was that he was just, oh yeah, we're going to do some slam poetry and.
Exactly, just overdoing it almost. To a
I mean,
point
he was doing
was
the most.
Becoming
and
obnoxious.
Even his wife said that, like, you know, slam poetry, Martin episodes, like.
And she said she's doing it, she's compromising because she is the trophy black wife.
Right.
And she gets the
house.
Money.
She gets the money.
And
she gets
the money.
House that she always wanted. And he gets the black wife that he always wanted.
And when we see this as actually a form of opposodic racism, which means that it's the opposite of what we insist racists are, which is the whole KKK aspect that I think you were trying to bring in the beginning of the conversation. But it's like, this is what we think racists are. But in some ways, this is just as racist as that. It's like trying to be too understanding. Earn actually gets upset and frustrated then. It's like, stop trying to be likable. Stop being so likable to him.
Right.
You know, we get it, you know? And it happens a lot. It's like, we get that you get it. We get it. Thank you. But the whole party was done in a tasteless form. There were slave ships that were holding sushi. And the names of the drinks were like Master's Poison.
Right. And it was a Plantation Master's Poison. Like, really?
It was just, it was done in almost a tasteless manner, almost in a mocking and, like you said, condescending manner. It was very interesting. Now, what I took from it is actually that the husband wasn't the racist of the two. It was the wife.
It was, oh, yeah.
I felt
it
like Monique, who was black, is the more racist of the two in the couple because she felt so taken in by the privilege, she felt distant from the commoners.
Oh, right. She had no connection. She had lost all complete connection to regular black people.
Well, we see that a lot in black society is where it's almost like a distancing when we see, and I see that a lot in places like Baldwin Hills, which is a very affluent black neighborhood. And there's a distancing it from Compton and Inglewood. Almost even the name Baldwin Hills is a reflection of
Beverly Hills. Exactly.
That's the whole, the conceptualization is we are now part of the elite. And we don't even want to know. We disdain those who are not. And that happens a lot. It's a very interesting dichotomy that I've seen in black culture. And I've seen it myself because I've seen both sides. Monique even brings up things like Jack and Jill Society, which a lot of people don't know what Jack and Jill is. But Jack and Jill is basically black debutantes. And it's intermixing within Jack and Jill culture. It's like if you wanted Eagle Scouts for your black kids to teach them how, instead of how to camp, you're teaching them how to be wealthy and elitist, then that's what Jack and Jill in a lot of ways are. And Jack and Jill events are dedicated to introducing young black women of age to young black men of age that are part of the subsection elite 1% group of black America so that they can interact and intermarry and create this system of continuation of wealth. But the wealth is subjugated to the white. And that's what we saw is that Monique is only wealthy because she's married to the white man. The white man is still the master. And even when Earn and the doctor are having a conversation, the doctor is sitting on the desk talking down to Earn in a way.
Oh, it's back to me? Okay, so yeah, no, definitely is talking down to him. I don't know. It was comical. I understood all about, you know, like from Van's perspective of, you know, like I need this and like, you know, let's be everything that we're not. And I got that because there's been plenty of times, and I'm sure you guys out there can relate, where you've been with your significant other and you're out. And y'all, you know, and before you get to the party or you get to the barbecue, y'all might have a nice little argument and you can't stand each other for that moment. And you get there and it's, oh, hey, how you doing? And you're joking and you're laughing and
you're putting on a show.
Right. As what, you know, in my dad calls putting on your game face. And that's what it is. You put on your game face. And I felt like she was doing a good job of putting on her game face more so than Earn until she started to drink a little bit more, and then she started to lose it, and he was starting to kind of pick up the slack. So there was a little bit of a balancing that going on, because I felt like as she stopped caring a little bit, he started picking up the slack. And granted, there was when he made the comment when they were talking to the mothers. The housewives about the whole Jack and Jill thing. And he made the, you know, and they said, well, what do you do? And he said, well, I do nothing. And he, you know, when we were watching this, said that was mean, but I didn't really think it was mean. I mean, I know that it was.
But you saw that later. Van also thought it was mean.
Right.
It
I know that he was being facetious when he said it.
She had specifically brought up the fact that he needed to put on a show and that he's good at putting on a show. That's what she had said. So since we switched gears to go right into that, we did see the return of Van, and we saw a return of Van and Earn's relationship. But at this point, whatever time frame has passed, Van and Earn are not in a good place. In fact, Van is picking up Earn from another girl's place. And the girl is clearly someone who Earn is having sexual relations with, but it's very casual. He gets high and gets in the car, and we actually see Van being able to see the girl. So it wasn't even something that Earn was hiding. So it shows what place that they were in their relationship. They get in the car, and Earn is forced to go to this party to begin with, something Van has put together in order to network. And as they go to, they do start bickering. And that happens with a lot of couples.
Right.
Bicker before you go out. But this kind of bickering is a different level because they are not in a good place. They are putting on an entire show because they are telling people at the party that they are married and together and happily married, and that both of them are at least to some degree successful. Successful enough to be there, to be in the house as opposed to being in the field working. And that's the whole concept. So when we do see this, Earn turning to Van and putting on a show in front of the three women, asking them questions. When asked what he does, he says, I do nothing. In fact, it's Van that does everything. She's the mother to my, she works, she does everything. She doesn't get the credit that she deserves. I do nothing. He is being condescending at that moment. That is that is a moment of
was
being,
it or was he being 100%. Facetious?
He was being both. At that point, there is no difference in the tone. The tone is, I'm doing what you wanted me to do by rubbing your actions in your own face. And Van is forced to go into the bathroom, take a moment to cry to herself and come out. And she even expresses to Earn how mean that was.
Right.
So it was something that was mean. Whether you took it as mean or not, right. It was portrayed as a mean
act. And I got it. I got the intent, but I kind of felt like there was some truth deep down in what he said, because she does hold it down.
Well, maybe there was some truth.
And he does know that she holds it down.
I mean, clearly there's some truth. Van is everything, wife material and more. In fact, one thing I did notice is that their ability to play off each other was amazing. We saw them speaking to a playwright and director and everything else that this young lady was, which we've seen this a lot. And once again, in the South, you see this type of figure where it's this person who's like, I'm an author and I'm a writer. And because of that, I'm almost more literate and better than you. She's telling them about her play, which is just a silly premise of people being held up at a strip club during Katrina. And we see Van and Earn play off each other's words so eloquently and so well, almost finishing each other's sentences as they go.
Exactly.
You know, kind of like what we did just there. And exactly. It's an interesting point of view is to see that they do have chemistry. They do have a dynamic energy that flows between each other. And that only comes through knowing each other so well. So we know that on one hand, they're extremely upset with one another and dismayed by their relationship and by being together. But on the other hand, they have this true organic chemistry that's filled with a mutual admiration and knowledge of one another. They know Van knows Earn and Earn knows Van enough to even know when to tell each other to stop drinking or not to act up. They catch it before it happens. And that's how well they know each other. And that's how you can tell the strength of a true relationship, in my opinion.
Definitely. And I would like to see, because I know we're getting close to the end now. I really
The end meaning next week is the season finale.
Right, next week is the season finale. That yes, not the end of the world, just the end of the show. I hope that they get to some kind of common middle ground. And given the way this episode ended, I think we're going to see that. Because I do like Earn and Van together, and I do want them to work it out. Earn and the random thoughts. It's not really, I don't really, yeah.
What random thoughts are you referring to?
The one in the, you know, whose house he left in, you know, in the morning when she picked him up.
I mean, oh, you mean the actual thought, like I said, the girl.
Right.
Okay.
The girl. So, right, the girl.
But that's a thing. That's a phase maybe he's going through. And also we've seen Van is dating other
right.
people
She's
as well.
Right, she's going out on some dates as well.
So it's not
so I ultimately, right, and it's not. And I would like for them to get back together. And work it out. You know?
I'm sure most viewing audience would, because that's the dynamic that we've been set up. Like, they are the true love. But the truth is, in real life, unfortunately, these things don't always work out.
Oh, no. There's not always a rainbow at the end of the, you know, whatever.
There's not always a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
There you go.
Sure. And there's not always a rainbow at the end of a storm or whatever other cliche you want to throw out. We do know that the one thing that Atlanta is, more than anything else, is very, very real. And I don't know if Van and Earn actually ultimately end up, and I don't even know if that's the point of the show. The point of this particular show, we saw one side, we saw a relationship between man and woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we saw husband and wife, a fake husband and wife that actually loved each other and knew each other very well, right? And Van and Earn. And then a real husband and wife
that did not know each other.
They were just, it was a legal contract. They got married for the benefit. It was a mutual beneficial agreement between the
two.
Pretty
much. They're roommates.
Exactly. Very, very good roommates.
Yeah, in a very nice, nice, nice house.
And we saw Monique's interaction with her husband was very, very distant, way more so than the distance we saw between Van and Earn, even though they're in an actual argument. Then we saw relationships overall in there, in the place. We saw the relationship between the bartender who spoke to Earn in a disrespectful manner because Earn didn't just get something from the bar that was on the menu.
Oh, right. Off the pre-selected menu. He wanted just, cranberry and vodka.
And he didn't stand in line. And that was very interesting because I saw what I remember in the movie Menace to Society when the police officer, the black police officer, was actually harder on the black, suspect that he had on. It was like, I hate this guy. The black bartender basically told Earn to get in place in line, but it was like get in place in life. It was placism in a form of racism. And it was just very interesting to see that.
Well,
it's like, get here, and then you can only take, you can only pick what's on the menu. You can only get what's given to you. And that's where we saw, because this was the help. And we saw Monique speak to the people who were working the event as if they were slaves. She told one group that this isn't an orphanage, it's a party to
you
smile.
Need to smile, exactly.
Told the valet if they needed more food, she would send it out basically
on
the
plate. Right.
Exactly, to the back. She treated the people, the workers who were
like
mostly
the help,
who were all black, like they were not just the help,
the
but
slaves.
She was now a master in the slave quarters, commanding the slaves. And that's the other relationship we saw. It's a relationship between black elite and black, what we would say is just common. And we saw that dynamic play out, and it was very harsh. And I think it's a reality in a lot of our lives. And I'd love to know what you guys also think. Remember, I'd love for you to comment on anything we talk about. Just comment below. Let us know what you think at all times. And if you disagree, feel free to do so. I know a lot of you do often, and that's how conversations get started. And that's what Atlanta's about, is starting a conversation. So how did you feel about Monique, period?
I've known and met people like her in life, in real life. So, I mean, you know, those kind of people, I don't really take them with more than a grain of salt. I already know what to expect. I'm based on how they are, I already know what to expect from them. I at the same time know how to play that game. So if I'm having a conversation with them and I don't feel like, you know, ruffling in the feathers, I just, yeah, that's right, Susie, and keep it pushing. Yeah, I didn't really care for Monique.
And that's how Van was kind of playing it as well.
She didn't really care for Monique either, but you know, that's what she knew she needed to do
to get places.
Exactly.
To get places. With Monique's character, I obviously wasn't a big fan of Monique herself, but I was a big fan of the character being portrayed on television because I hadn't seen it being so blatant before.
Right.
Where we know this character, like you said, we all know Moniques in the Black community. Mm-hmm. We know Moniques. They are people who think they're better than the rest of us because of their circumstance. Their circumstance allows them to be better, right? They're allowed, they have wealth or whatever, power, whatever the situation is, they are part of an elite, and they don't realize that technically they're also, in some ways, part of the help. But they don't feel that. In the South, there was a term during slavery called house nigger. And that's the term we and almost have to use.
What I was going to say was, not only did I kind of get that vibe from her, but there was another term that they used that was used in 12 Years a Slave, and I can't remember, but Alfre Woodard, Woodard's character, where she was like I want to say the house madam, but she wasn't the house madam, but she was like, she was the house slave, but she was also the slave master's mistress.
I understand.
So she had privileges. Priority. She had privileges.
And we see that. And we also saw a similar character in Samuel L. Jackson in Django. So it was the same character of the person who was like playing a part, but is actually somehow in a way oppressing for the oppressor,
right,
in a lot of ways, and it's helping it, and it's self-sabotage, and it's a form of self-hate. What did you think about the husband's character?
Again, I've met people like this in real life. While I do see the issue with it, and sometimes I just find it comical, and I can't help but laugh. It's like, okay, bro, like at some point, I need you to go ahead and have several seats. Because at this point, you're doing way too much. You know, I'm Black, and I'm not doing all the stuff that you're trying to do right now. Like, I need you to calm down. And like you said earlier, we get it. We get that you get it. Cool. I don't know. I thought he wasn't I didn't think he was a bad guy.
Feel like he had good intentions.
Right, Why not? Very good intentions. He had no malintent. Yeah, I mean, you know, he was a good guy, and I kind of got a little bit of a Rachel Dolezal vibe from that guy. Like, if he could have kinked up his hair a little bit and you know, self-tanned it up, he probably would have went ahead and
I don't
ran
know
with
if
it.
He would, and I'll tell you why, because that ultimate card of white privilege is something that he played very well. And while I actually really enjoyed him, I don't know if I'd rather someone be... I obviously that's not my ideal person to interact with, but I'd rather someone like him than someone who's burning crosses in my front yard. Like this form,
true.
And it's still both racist, by the way. Oh,
can I go take it a step further?
Sure.
I would almost rather deal with him than deal with somebody like Monique.
In a lot of ways, and that's ultimately a character that you're going to have to look at. So when we're dealing with him and you said, well, I get it, you're doing the most, maybe we as a culture should do more. Maybe that's why we reflect and that's why we get so annoyed at these people who play that part, because we don't like being preached to or taught, but maybe we need to teach ourselves. Maybe we should be more inclined to learn more about Black history and do more. And that way we are the leaders of our own our own cultural destiny in that manner and cultural history in that manner and cultural subjugation in that manner. That's maybe something we need to take upon ourselves. Maybe I, as a person, need to be the change. I need to learn more about MLK. I need to learn more about Malcolm X. I need to learn more about the plight of race and slavery within this country, because it is annoying when someone else tells us, especially when that person is not a person of color and they're preaching to us, because now they're owning it once again. They are now owning it. And we saw that with him. He had been to Africa and took that token picture with the black man, the black African tribal leader. And he had all this African and slavery memorabilia throughout the house and the token black wife. And yet we see a lot of affluent black men growing up and getting successful and then marrying white women in almost the same opposite reverse move.
Right.
It's a very similar situation where now it's like, I'm too good for a black woman. And it's like, interesting to see that. It's very interesting to see that. So that's what I took from his character.
That's a good perspective. I hope everybody's out there taking notes, because Teron just took us to school, y'all.
No. I'm simply just giving an opinion and expressing a thought form because of something I saw. But he's
definitely giving a lot of things that are definitely good for some conversation starters. And again, you know, like you said earlier, hit us up in the comments. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, of course, we just definitely need to talk about it. And also, while we're still on the subject, let's talk about how amazing of a house that was. That house was amazing. Oh, my goodness.
That house was bananas. That house was legit.
It was amazing, but it was a plantation.
And she, she's like, there's bathrooms over here. She's like, and to the right, there's bathrooms. And upstairs, there's bathrooms. No, there's just so many bathrooms.
Bathrooms to the left of us. Bathrooms to the right of us. Bathrooms. Boil and thunder.
That's pretty much. Like, when you have a house where you need valets, your house is the business.
For a lot of parties, especially, I go to a number of parties like at both Persian people and black people's houses that are more affluent, and they have valets, of course, because of their house. But we saw, like I was saying, that I felt like it was a plantation. You saw the plantation, mm-hmm. the help was outside, and they were supposed to know their place. Mm-hmm. They were supposed to know their place. And when it comes to the bathroom, it reminded me of the Lil Wayne lyric. It's like, I got 10 bathrooms I can ish all day. That's what I felt like, why I was like, wow, this many bathrooms. What I didn't notice was that I saw an absence of children. Like, I didn't see them having children. I don't know if they did. It may have been mentioned in the episode. I'm not really sure. I think they did because she brought up Jack and Jill. But I don't know. I didn't see any pictures of the kids. I would have loved to have seen that interaction.
But I kind of feel like that kind of a party, it's not kid appropriate. Even though they weren't doing anything necessarily.
Sure, it was definitely an adult party. But a Juneteenth celebration is supposed to be a family oriented.
This
wasn't family oriented. This was elite oriented.
It was elite, and it was all about networking and mixing.
And people were interested. That's why the first question out of people's mouths were, what do you do? It wasn't, where do you come from? How's everything? It was, what do you do? That was, and that happens a lot, especially in LA. The culture is, let's be professionals. Let's always network. See what I can get from everyone else. The ABCs of social interaction always be closing.
Yep.
And so that's how I felt about it. They were always closing one another. We even saw the pastor figure, the T.D. Jakes, so to speak, gentlemen upstairs, giving a lecture on relationships and Jesus, something a lot of pastors do. They are also motivational speakers and they're life coaches and they're everything, giving it on, somehow a little asking for money in some way. And then Van just simply walking away.
Yeah,
just couldn't have it anymore, because clearly that was the third relationship that we saw. And the relationship between the pastor and his wife, she didn't say a word. She wasn't even allowed to speak in a subservient. And we see this as like a lot of fakeness throughout, and that wealth and that house and that everything, and even the atmosphere was superficial on what is supposed to be a very deep, thought out Juneteenth event, which is to commemorate the emancipation of slavery within the United States, but specifically in the state of Texas. And as we fade out to the show, This is the one lasting impression that I had, is that was all fake. And then we saw Earn become very real at the end. Mm-hmm. Once it was found out that he was Paperboy's manager, and he's, even though he had stated he's a music manager, and rap was looked down upon, which I've seen by the elite, by people like Oprah, by people like Michael Jordan, who mm-hmm. looked down at rap and rappers and that entire urban culture. Then I saw something very interesting. Earn got very real. Van knew immediately, tried to warn, but Earn got very real because he didn't like being attacked in that manner, and especially with his family. Whatever it was, his ego came to play, his manhood was in question, and he just basically called everyone out on their bull.
Yeah.
And he called them
all out. It's clapback time.
And they left, and Monique was very upset, and the doctor was like, come back. Still trying to relate. Still trying to reach out.
Being very likable.
And we saw that at the end.
Yeah, because he said like, this is dumb.
Yeah, this is dumb. This is whack.
This party is dumb. Yeah.
And then we saw something we hadn't seen in a little while, is that we saw what Van saw in Earn. Van saw a realism, a real connection, and she asked him to pull over, and the foreshadow was of their sexual interaction.
Right.
And it was a real raw primal moment that was very interesting.
Right.
I hope to see more. We love Earn and Van's dynamic. I love when the show is about these things. And you know what? I've been growing a greater appreciation for the abstract things that the show does and reflects on, but I also really like this. And maybe it's because I have the biggest crush on Van. Van, I love you wherever you are. Hit me up. It goes down in the DM. But it really comes down to, I love Earn and Van's interaction, because there's just a magic there. And when they're on screen together, the chemistry is wonderful.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And not only that, but I felt like in that moment, as they're getting ready to leave, like, he was her hero. You know, he was saving her from that, you know, house of fakeness, so to speak. And, you know, and that's eternal. And, you know, every woman wants her man to be their hero. And I felt like he said, okay, all right, time out, show's over, it's a wrap, I can't do this, we gotta go, this is whack, everything in here is dumb.
I feel the same way about our show sometimes, but it is time over.
It is time to wrap it up.
It's time to wrap. I don't know how whack this is, but I'm sure some of you will let us know in the comments. But I appreciate you watching each and every week. And remember, next week is the last and final episode of Atlanta, and it will be a wrap for the season of this after show. We look forward to having you back. I would love to say some predictions, but honestly, anything goes on this show. So we have learned to expect the unexpected when it comes to Atlanta on FX. Can't wait till next episode to watch the season finale. Where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter, ChaosJ, KAOSJ. And they can also find me on Instagram, Chaos_Oceans31.
And I need everybody, you know what? I'm directing you all to go to my Twitter @IAMTehran. It's just like the hat. It's also just like the capital of Iran. If you don't know how to spell Tehran, just watch CNN. Guys, till next week, we'll see you.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.